You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Chad Lampe and Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. Welcome back, Dr. Davies.
Hey, thank you very much, Tracy. Good to hear from you. How's everything going?
Well, it's going well. It's going well.
We are, Dr. Davies is here with us during a fundraising edition of Sounds Good, so we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that it is New Member Monday, Dr. Davies.
Well, we were just talking during that last song about the new members and everything else, and what I would like you for to do is make that new number 7, increase that by 1. Uh-huh. That gives you $100 from Ashland, yep. And also I see a program goal of $925. Let's make a $100 pledge to that program goal for you as well.
Call 1-800-599-4737. Become a new member on this New Member Monday.
Oh, look at that. And she's fast. She's already writing it down. Look at that.
Quick, look at it. Look at Carrie go.
Good job, Carrie.
All right. So as these pledges continue to come in, it's a great Monday morning and a beautiful Monday. Dr. Davies, you had a busy weekend. It was family weekend. Also, there was barbecue on the river in Paducah. And from what I hear, you were an official judge this year?
I was an official judge. I had to take the oath to become a barbecue judge, and I had to swear that I didn't participate in any duels in Kentucky.
Did you really?
Or served as a second. And I like the fact that they said in Kentucky. That gave me a loophole that I could swing around a little bit.
Who knows what happened in Nevada, Oregon? Who
there
knows?
You go. That's right.
So what was your plate favorite?
Well, I was selected, as you know, one of the things I did when I first came here by happenstance to get out of unpacking a lot of boxes. I went up to the barbecue judging class up at our Paducah campus and was able to qualify to be a judge. And boy, I put qualify loosely. But I was selected and then I was able to judge the ribs.
Oh,
and so that entailed getting up early Saturday morning, being up in Paducah, and sampled six different ribs from six different vendors. Mm-hmm. It's all blind, so I have no idea who they were. Mm-hmm. They were pretty darn good, so I really enjoyed it.
Were they wet or dry rub?
They were all dry, and one of the contestants did provide some mild and spicy sauce, and so I did have a little bit of sauce with that, but all the other ones were all dry.
Well, we're glad that you had a good time at barbecue on the river, and you had a family meet weekend as well. I'm sure that you had a good time talking with racer families.
Oh, it was absolutely. You know, this last weekend, and I would say starting on Thursday, was just a great opportunity to see a lot of elements about Murray State. On Thursday night, our music department did Celebration of Music up at the Paducah Carson Center, and boy, did they did an amazing show. They had the marching band went through the rib cook-off, which was a lot of fun. They ended up at the Carson Center, and then they put on about an hour to hour and a half show and just did amazing work with all of the bands and all of the ensembles and choirs, and just an incredible show. Then we have family weekend started to kick off on Friday, and just walking around campus and meeting the parents, meeting the families, the moms, dad, grandparents, aunts, uncles, you know, siblings and everything else about Murray State, and hearing them talk about how their family member was enjoying Murray State, what they were appreciative of and whatnot. And it was really neat. There was one confession moment that was really funny. A parent came up to me and said, you know, I'm a parent, and I was over in the Franklin Hall, and I sat on a bench, and I broke it. And I told the RA that if I ever saw the president, I would tell him and confess that I'm the one that broke the bench. And so sure enough, he came up and talked to me and said he broke the bench. But we're not going to charge him for
no
that.
No charge for
no,
that
No
bench.
Charge. No charge for bench.
It was probably an old bench.
It was an old bench. You know, deferred maintenance. We'll chalk it up to that. But, you know, to have, you know, literally 4,000 or so visitors on our campus in association with Family Weekend. We also had the Commonwealth Honors Academy reunion as well, and to talk to the parents of those seniors right now and talk about Murray State and the advantages that they saw as members of the Commonwealth Honors Academy while they were here and coming back. And I mean, we gave out certificates to quite a few, and I would say a good 60%, 70% of those students are really seriously considering coming to Murray State. So that's excellent. So these are top students and so the students that we really want to recruit and reach out to. So again, that's very important. The other thing too is, you know, not part of Family Weekend, but I got to say, I went to the production Toyer by our theater department on Sunday afternoon. I was going to that production thinking, okay, it's Sunday afternoon, it's not going to be very full, you know. But it was a packed house. It was really excited. And most of them were students. And I know that they're getting extra credit for classes or whatnot. But the fact that they were there on a Sunday afternoon supporting their fellow students was really amazing. And I tell you right now, that was a powerful production. Our theater department did an amazing job. One actor, one actress on stage at all times, basically. And a couple of voiceovers back and forth, so four students total. Very important play, dealing with sexual assault and harassment issues about how the media is making that the norm and numbing our audiences, numbing our people to the dangers of that in a very, very dramatic and very, very important way. The Tori and Brad, the two students who were the main actors, did an amazing job, very powerful. Very difficult play because of the content, and also very difficult and just the technique that they had to do. And they outstanding job, absolutely outstanding.
Wow. So, again, a really busy weekend. Now we'll talk about some of the business of the university. And it seems unfortunate, but you're going to be looking for a new chief facilities officer, Kim Oatman, who has been the chief facilities officer for, I guess, since 6 years or so. And he has three major construction projects that are getting ready to start: the Breathitt Veterinary Center in Hopkinsville. Then you have the final phase of the West Science Campus here. And also we'll have a residential college construction coming up in a few months as well. So with those three projects, it seems like you've got a pretty important job of finding a replacement for him.
Sure. First and foremost, Kim has done an amazing job for Murray State University in his 6 years in that role. Before that, he was obviously a member of our team and has a long tradition at Murray State and has done an amazing work. And he will be sorely missed. He's going to the University of Louisville, and I know that he will do excellent work there. And it was a tough decision for him. I know that he was balancing those projects that you just mentioned, which are very, very exciting and whatnot. But being closer to family, and he's an empty nester now with his children all off to college and our to the workforce and et cetera. So it was an opportunity for him that he just couldn't pass up. One of the things that I've looked at is, it's a two-phase process. One, we need to get an interim in as quickly as possible, and then second of all, then start a national search, and we will do a national search. With those projects that you just mentioned, I wanted to really think about who will be able to guide those projects, the BVC, the new residential hall, the completion of the engineering physics department, as well as get us prepared for the next capital requests and whatnot. And we've got a lot of things on our plate that we need to be taking a look at. The renovation and innovation of the libraries. Deferred maintenance is a significant issue on this campus. We also need to be taking a very hard look at how we position ourselves, not only for the next capital cycle, but then the following capital cycle with our master planning process and whatnot. And then we just have ongoing operations. We have a wonderful buildings and grounds crew, obviously. They do an amazing job. But we're stretching them and pulling them very, very thin. And we need to make sure that we have a leader that will be able to maintain the excellence, and if not increase the bar, because we always need to be improving. What I did is I reached out to some of my colleagues that I've worked with in the past. And over the weekend, on Friday, Thursday night, we were able to bring in an individual who met with all the facilities staff and leadership and others and had a day-long interview process. And we went through the BVC, we went through the residential hall, we went through the engineering, went through deferred maintenance, we went through all the capital projects, and didn't scare him off. His name is David Burdett. He most recently was the vice president of finance and administration at Central Michigan University, where he led the construction of a new medical college, School of Medicine, an $85 million project that he was able to deliver from scratch and put up into construction, financing, and everything else. Also during that same time frame, he led a very robust deferred maintenance program and capital project expansion at the Central Michigan University. Prior to that, he was at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, which may sound familiar.
Yeah.
where he and I actually worked together. And in working with him there, we did a $300 million residential program.
$300 million?
$300 million.
Okay.
18 res halls. We demolished 16, built 18. up. It's kind of fun to go on a campus and start tearing down buildings, but that's beside the point. But it was a it was a $300 million program. At the time, was the largest in the country. And also at that same time, he and I worked together on a $42 million event center. As well as, and that was a deal where we had $22 million from private sources that we were able to use and bond, as well as $20 million from state appropriations. He also led a $10 million library renovation, along with about $17 million other in capital projects and programs. Before that, he was VP of finance at Radcliffe, and before that, VP at Fredonia. So he brings with him a wealth of experiences. He will start on October the 21st, the same day that will be Kim Otwin's last day. He and Kim hit it off. They are talking, and they're going through that process now, and it will be a very, very smooth transition. David will hit the ground running. I have the full confidence in him to move forward on all these projects and keep them and keep those projects moving forward, because they are so very, very important. And as I mentioned, we will be doing a national search. David is, as I mentioned, he retired from Central Michigan. I was able to convince him to really think about helping us out in these very exciting times, and he's eager to do that. He will report to Jackie Dudley, the vice president, and given his experience as a VP, I know that he will also be helpful to her in many different things as well.
Let's move on to enrollment now. Murray State has consistently been tracking enrollment and hoping for an increase, and it appears that could we be touching the 11,000 student mark?
We will touch and surpass. We'll be at 11,000. We're projecting, when final numbers are done, about 11,166 to be precise. So we're very excited about those opportunities. Included in that is 1,512 first-time freshmen, as well as 761 transfer students. So those numbers are very, very positive. It's great to be above the 11,000 mark. I know that's been a watershed moment for this university. And so I feel comfortable. I feel excited about where we are. But at the same time, as we look to the future, as we look to the changing demographics and whatnot, we need to be taking a look at our admissions policies and procedures, and looking how we go through the process of attracting students to apply, and how we move them from application to enrolled, from application to accepted and to enrolled. We also need to be taking a very hard look at our retention numbers and how well we're doing with those. And then again, I'm not talking about just the overall retention. We need to be breaking it down into student segments and student populations, and making sure that when we admit a student and enroll a student, that we are giving them the opportunities for success, be it graduate, being retained from freshman to sophomore, be it moving forward towards degree, and then eventually graduation. And I think we've got some questions and answers, questions that we need to answer with that. We cannot always just be concentrating on that number. We need to be looking at how are we ensuring that those students who come to us have that probability of success, and making sure that we're not setting them up for failure down the road, i.e. dropping out with high debt levels and not being able to transfer to another university, be it a community college or to a university. So again, as we look at our own processes, as we look at our own procedures, of course we're going to be worried about the numbers, the number of freshmen, et cetera. But I also think we need to be very careful of making sure that we're really targeting college-ready freshmen and college-ready transfers, so that they come here, that they are successful, and that they can move forward. Some people think when we've had these conversations, a lot of our students take remedial courses. I'm not saying that we're going to get rid of remedial courses or the like, but we need to be very, very aware of the process and the students that we're attracting, and making sure that they have that level of success.
And my last question, a few weeks back, Governor Beshear has expanded the tobacco ban, rather, in executive cabinet offices and vehicles, and it also includes e-cigarettes. Now, Murray State does not have a campus smoking ban, and I wondered if there are designated smoking areas on campus. There are not designated smoking areas on campus.
Not really.
I thought there had been. This was years ago.
What the governor did is banned all tobacco use, not just smoking, but all tobacco use. That includes officer chewing tobacco and the like, and also all smoking of any paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. hookah is one of these things that keep on popping up, and whatnot, and e-cigarettes and et cetera, on state-owned property. There is an exception to prisons and to state universities. But he asked us very specifically, called Murray State out and also Western University out, because we do not have any ban on smoking. We have loosely defined smoking designated areas and whatnot. He's specifically through the press release and through a discussion I've had with him and also with the lieutenant governor presenting to the CPE, has asked the two universities to specifically look at our policies and procedures with regards to tobacco use, smoking, and everything else. And it's being framed as, and importantly, right, as the health issue, as smoking is a leading cause to significant health issues and the like. I've taken that as a directive from the governor that we will look into it. I do not have an outcome in mind. I don't have a specific, yes, we're going to become tobacco-free, yes, we're going to become smoke-free, or anything along those lines. I will say that beyond parking, one of the most common complaints I receive from students is the smoking on campus. And specifically, not that students, some do, want it completely banned, but where smoking occurs, right in front of doors to buildings and whatnot. It's important to note, too, that we do not allow smoking inside the facilities of the university. We've empowered a task force that has already been looking at this, that is reporting to insurance and benefits. It has faculty, it has staff, it has students on it to give, in my mind, what I've asked them to do is give me the pros and cons of going tobacco-free, which means all tobacco, going smoke-free, which means you can still use tobacco products but just can't smoke or e-cigarettes and the like, or status quo. Pros and cons of each of those, and then the nuances within those. For example, I mentioned we may maintain our current policy of allowing smoking in designated areas, but moving and having designated areas and moving them away from the facilities that they have. We may one idea was to make certain zones completely smoke-free. For example, the area around Winslow. Because of the food-related products there. The mall, connecting the Kerr Center to the library, having that completely smoke-free because students need and faculty need to walk that perimeter. And again, as I mentioned, moving away from the actual entrances to buildings. There's also a lot of students who do want, you know, completely 100% tobacco-free. It's an issue that we need to look into, we need to answer, and we will. At this point in time, I think there's obviously a lot of pros and cons, a lot of emotions on all sides. And I will also have to say, it's not an issue that I would have said in my first 3 or 4 months I want to talk about. No, it's not along those lines at all. But it is something that we need to address and take a look at and then move forward.
Well, Dr. Bob Davies, thanks so much for taking time to meet with us. We speak monthly here on WKMS. You'll be able to hear this interview a little bit later at WKMS.org. And, of course, we are fundraising, and Dr. Davies made a call out for new members on this New Member Monday. Please call right now, 1-800-599-4737. Pledge $5 a month and become a new member. Dr. Davies, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Chad, and thank you, Tracy. And as always, go Racers.